My name is Fiona Demarque from Melbourne, Australia. I'm an inspirational speaker and resilience coach. Keep listening to Vivid Vision podcast with Shevu.
Welcome to the Vivid Vision podcast. Thank you for tuning in and making your choice to win. This is the show we normally motivate and inspire. We give you tactical strategies to implement on your way to greatness. And now, here's your host, Shevu Umeni.
All right. Let me welcome our listeners to Vivid Vision Podcast. Wherever you are in Africa, in Europe, Australia, Asia, I don't know if people are in Antarctica. You are welcome to Vivid Vision Podcast. So today on Vivid Vision Podcast, we are honored to have Branch Isole, a poet, storyteller, and thought leader of spiritual Christianity with over 22 books to his name and a diverse career background. Branch is known for his contemporary short story that shed light on the unspoken issues and emotions we face. He will be sharing his expertise on the topic of seven steps to relationship repair and how understanding and paths of thoughts, truth, choice, and consequence can improve our relationships at home and at work. You welcome Mr. Branch Isole to Vivid Vision Podcast.
Thank you, Shevo. It's an honor to be here with you this morning.
So, Mr. Isole, can you give us an overview of the seven steps of relationship repair, what we should expect?
Sure. It's really important because, you know, a common cycle in many troubled relationships often goes like this. First, there's a harmful act or action, and this is followed by one of the parties saying, "I'm sorry." This is often followed by, you know, a stammering or stumbling or mumbled excuse, or often an effort to blame someone or someone else. And it's usually followed by another weak, "I'm sorry." And finally, one of the parties says, "Can't we just move on?" Well, the problem here is that the issue, whatever it may be, is never really addressed. And if it's not addressed, then it can't be worked on. And if it's not worked on by both parties, it can't be resolved. So the question becomes why, right? Why can't we move on? Why can't we get back to where we were and make it better? Usually the answer is because neither person knows what that next step is after "Can't we just move on?" And so the cycle just continues to repeat. There's no plan, there's no repair, and there's no taking responsibility. And this is important because people don't split up because they fall in love or they fall out of love. They leave because they become indifferent to the other person. And the steps that I'm going to share with your audience today can be used between partners, spouses, a parent and a teenager or an older child, can even be used with people who are at work together and maybe there's some friction between the coworkers. So these seven steps for relationship repair and reconciliation will work with any group or any couple, any people who are having issues, right? And they can't get through the issue because they don't know where to go next after the one finally says, "Okay, I'm sorry that I did that." So here's the situation. Every relationship that's experiencing negativity and that's been attempting, you know, to get over the issue or the problem and move forward usually just continues in a state of uncomfortableness because they can't reach a place where they can communicate and move forward. And And as a result, in too many relationships, there's often very little or no real change. So the question becomes, why, right? Well, the simple reason is they can't move on because they don't know what that looks like. Well, after your audience hears these seven steps, if they're in this kind of relationship where they're having issues and they're having problems and it can't be resolved, these seven steps will help them get it started and hopefully get through the process so they can identify the problem, deal with the problem, and eliminate the problem. So, why do we respond in the ways that we do, right? We're having an issue, we're having a problem, and we can't seem to rectify or solve the issue, and the question becomes why? Well, the answer is, for most of us, the response we know is the response that we saw as children, right? Our relationship examples were the adults in our lives. And so as we grew up, we learned from their words and from their actions and from their examples how you handle a problem situation, again, either at home or at work. And from childhood to teenager to adult, we learned what behavior under stress looks like by what we saw at home. So now we're an adult, how do we act? How do we react? Well, we're going to act and react by what we witnessed as a child, as a teenager. This is not to condemn anyone's parents. It's just a simple fact. The fact is we and our parents learned our core relationship values and behaviors by the words and the actions of those that we saw. And in fact, our parents saw, right? People generally grow up seeing examples. They then make those examples their own. And that's how they know how to respond in relationships, good, bad, or ugly. So those we look up at, those we watch for our examples under stress, it's their actions that we now imitate. Right? Because that's what we know. That's what we saw as children and teenagers. The fact is, most disagreements or fights in families never have a plan. They never know how to repair and reconcile, right? The cycle just continues to repeat over and over. So now we're going to talk to your listeners about the steps they can use after that question of, well, can't we just move on, right? To end the cycle, and so that we can end this inability to fix our relationship that happens time after time, family after family, and generation after generation. Most often, the first thing we do is we seek help from our friends and family, right? They sort of know what's going on. And we've talked to them about the problems we're having. Sometimes we talk to our friends more about the problem than we talk with the other person who's involved in the issue. So what do our friends say? What do our families say? Well, they recommend that we get help, right? Go see somebody who can help you, who can help you work through this issue. And the first thing that happens when we go to get help is the helper, a therapist, or who's ever listening to the issue and the problem says, what's going on here? And the first answer is usually, well, we don't know how to communicate. So here's the first fact. Those who want to repair and reconcile and rebuild their relationship start at the beginning. And it's about communication, but it goes deeper than that. The first element of any troubled relationship that must be identified and addressed is the identification of the harm. meaning what act or action caused the pain and why. So in looking at the core issue necessary to recognize and understand how are we going to repair the relationship, the one thing that's always overlooked is the fact that there are three levels of pain associated with every troubled event. Now, notice I didn't say relationship, I said every event. So if you're in a relationship and you're having problems and the issue comes up and you don't resolve it, it's only a matter of time before the issue will come up again. And we get into this cycle of harm being done to one person in the relationship, or possibly another if you're in a team situation at work. Whatever that harm is or that action is actually goes deeper than what you did or what you said. So there's three levels of pain that are under the action. The first one is the pain that's caused by the actual act or action. This is when one person does something that's harmful to the other person. Whatever that act or action may be, it's the problem that's destructive to the relationship. So the first level of pain is associated with the manifested action. You know, the question is, well, how or why did you do that? The second level is a feeling of betrayal. And this is where the deep hurt starts to resonate. Because at this level, indignation or anger sets in, and the deep emotional pain exists in this place for a long time. This is the level that's called betrayal. And this is the one that really hurts the person. First of all, whatever that person did or the harm they caused is recognized, and they can say, I'm sorry, right? And you can even believe they say, I'm sorry, and they mean it. But the betrayal to what they did is the one that cuts like a knife. It's the one that stays within us. And because it stays there, the third level is broken trust. And this is where the pain resonates and stays. Whenever you hurt somebody by a physical or a verbal abuse or a manifestation of how you've betrayed them, that trust is broken. And as long as the trust is broken, it's going to be very, very difficult to reconcile and rebuild. So these three levels of pain exist: the action, the betrayal, and the broken trust. All three of these are very real. Therefore, they all must be part of the seven steps in order for us to rebuild the relationship. Now, before you start the seven steps, there's two additional things that have to happen. First, both people must be willing to discuss the issue openly and honestly. You know, when we get into this situation, especially in a personal relationship with someone that we care for and we say that we love, it's necessary that we understand this is the most important person to us, and therefore this is the person that we need to be most open and most honest with. The second thing is both people must be willing to go through all seven steps. Okay, the question becomes why? Because these seven steps I'm going to share today don't solve the problem. What they do is they guide the people involved through the repair process. And like any other behavioral change program, they only work if they're embraced and they're engaged by all the people who are involved. So here's the caveat. The seven steps don't replace professional help, but many people need, you know, an outside influence or an outside counselor, somebody who can listen to it and help them solve it. And many couples end up needing professional help to deal with whatever the issue is. That's just the plain truth. So if you need professional help, but what if you don't have the time or the money or the opportunity or the inclination to get professional help right now? That's what these seven steps will do. They'll help you get started. They'll provide a plan to help you work through the problem. And then when you're ready for professional help, if that time comes, these steps will have prepared you to go to the professional, and the foundation of the repair will be in place. Because what's happened is you've talked about the issue and you've decided and understood this is the problem. Those seven steps that I'm going to share help shine a light on the problem, so that if you get to a counselor or, you know, clinician, somebody who's going to help you, you've already established what the problem is. And when you share it with them, you're already going to have enough information to give them, like you've already been to two or three sessions with them, right? If you go in and your answer is, well, we don't know how to communicate, then the professional has to start down at square one, back at the beginning, and try and get to the problem. When you do these seven steps and go see the professional, you've already established what the problem is, and you've already started on the road to repair. So it makes it easier for that counselor or that professional to pick up right away and help you get started and move faster. Now, Chevo, before I give you the seven steps, do you have any questions or you want to make a comment?
I'm very, very excited. Why? Because it's this thing, this topic we are discussing on right now, is something that affects a lot of us. And it happened to me recently. Somebody got offended by maybe my actions. I tried to know what I did wrong, but she didn't say. I tried to ask what's going on, what happened. She didn't talk about it. The next thing she did, she blocked me on social media, wherever she could talk to me. So without communication, it cannot be any sort of relationship, whether just platonic, whether family, any kind of relationship. So I'm really, really glad that we are having this conversation. I believe that at the end of the day, anybody that listens to this would have something to take home, something to learn from, something to learn. Yeah.
Good, good. Okay. Well, what you just described happens every day, everywhere around the world, right? As people, we come into relationships wanting to be our best and show our best. And as we get to know people better, and as we come together as couples, you know, the more we learn, the more we accept. But somewhere on that path, there's going to be a problem or an issue, right? I mean, we all say and do things that we wish we could take back, that we're sorry that we said or did. And the other person, if we care for them enough, like you try to reconnect and say, okay, what's the problem? You know, if I don't know the problem, there's no way I can make it better. And oftentimes, like the lady you're talking about, you know, for whatever reason, either where they're at in their life or how they grew up and what they know, you know, they become so disenchanted that they don't want to talk about it. They don't want to reconnect. Well, sometimes we just have to give them time. You know, we all work through these kind of issues with ourselves first before we can ever identify, you know, why I feel the way I do. So we have to give it time. My wife and I have a 24-hour rule. right? It works really well for us. Anytime we are going to make an important decision, and I even use this, you know, in my podcast and with my writing. If I think of something and I write it down and I'm going to incorporate it for the podcast or my writing, I always wait 24 hours after I've done it, because with a little more clarity and time, oftentimes I'm a little more calm and I'm a little more ready to actually look at what the problem or the issue may be. So the first thing we do is we do the 24-hour rule. We put it away for 24 hours and then come back and look at it. And a lot of times we'll realize, oh, I missed this when I was thinking about it yesterday. Anyway, let's talk about the seven steps. And these are real important, but they're also very easy.
Mr. Burns.
Yes, sir.
Mr. Burns, sorry to cut you short. So I want to ask, people we search, people who behave like that, like you ask them, can we talk about it? Can we have a conversation? If we don't talk about it, I can't know what's wrong. And they just cut you off. They don't want to talk. They don't want to have a conversation, because where there is no communication, there will be no understanding, right?
Right.
And where there is no understanding, there is no relationship.
Right.
At any level, when I say relationship. So what do you think might be their issue? Because you're trying to help them to learn how to communicate. To me, their problem is lack of communication. Because when you learn communication, you understand people. So I think their problem is communication. But what do you think could be the root cause? Then it's not just one person, not just the friend I'm talking about. There are a lot of people like that I've met. So what could be the root cause?
Hey, everyone. This is Dr. Marsha Martin, the Heart Healer, and I want to encourage you to continue listening to Vivid Vision Podcasts with your host, Shivo. They are enlightening, inspiring, uplifting podcasts that will help you further your journey to success.
Wow, what a question. You know, the root cause can be anything if you don't know what it is and they don't express to you what it is. And here's the problem. If that other person you're talking about refuses to communicate, there's not a whole lot you can do about that. Now, if it's a personal relationship, you know, between partners or between a parent and a teenager or young adult or spouses, that person you're going to continue to have a relationship with in most cases, no matter what, even if it's a rocking relationship, until you can figure out, you know, why they're upset and how to correct it. If it's somebody at work, maybe you have to be around them, maybe you don't, you know. And if it's somebody that you've met online or just an acquaintance and they don't want to communicate, there's not a lot you can do about that. In that situation, here's what I would do. I would contact the person and I would say, I know you're upset. I'm not sure exactly why, but I'm ready and willing to address whatever it is has made you so upset that you don't want to talk. However, I can't do that unless you're going to interact with me. And so when you're ready to do that, if you are, you know, reach out and I'm happy to reestablish contact and try and explain, you know, what happened and why it happened from my side. If they refuse, you know, sometimes you just have to move on until they can work through it enough to know whether or not they want to reestablish contact or not. Like you say, if it's a relationship, a family relationship, or a romantic relationship, or somebody at work, you know, somebody that you're going to have continuous contact with, then you want to get them as quickly as possible to explain their side. You know, why are they feeling what they're feeling, and You know, why are they not willing to talk about it? But let's assume that the other person says, okay, you know, here's what you did, or here's what you said that I take offense to, or that you've transgressed against me, right? So, first step, the person who committed the offense, the transgressor, must recognize that there was harm done. You know, a lot of times in a relationship, especially a marital or spouse or partner relationship, we often say or do something that we don't think is very harmful. But the fact that the other person or the other people feel that they've been harmed, that goes back to those three steps of pain that we just talked about. You know, I do something or I say something that harms the other person, even though I think it was just me being me. That pain that that person is experiencing, first from the act of the action, and then second, and again, in a personal relationship, marriage, partners, there's this sense of betrayal, right? I didn't think you could ever do that to me. And then when they're feeling that sense of betrayal, then that trust can be broken. And that's why those three levels of pain are so important, because we have to understand, even if I said or did something that I thought was, you know, just in jest, or I really didn't mean to harm them, if they've been harmed and feel that pain, we have to understand that they are in that pain place. So, first thing, when I do something or say something, I have to recognize that even though I may not have meant it to be harmful, it has caused harm, right? So the recognition is first step. When I recognize that even though I didn't mean that to hurt them, they are hurting, I have to take responsibility for that. So the second step is taking responsibility for what I said or did, right? Okay, I said it or I did it and I didn't think it was harmful, but it apparently was harmful to you. So I understand that and I shouldn't have done it or said it. Step three, as the offender, I have to have remorse for what I did or what I said. Now, what is remorse? Remorse is me feeling pain myself for what I said or did. I know now that you are feeling pain and I'm remorseful. You know, I regret that I made you feel this way. The next step is regret, right? And a lot of people often ask me, well, what's the difference between remorse and regret? Because aren't they the same thing? Well, no, they're really not. When I feel regret, what I'm regretful is I'm feeling the pain that I caused, right? So when I am remorseful, I'm recognizing that I made you feel this pain. When I'm regretful, I'm recognizing that how can I do that, right? How could I cause that pain that you're now feeling? So let's review real quick. First, recognize harm was done. Second step, take responsibility. Third step, be remorseful. Next step, be regretful. So now we've dealt with the issue and we've got it back on the table and we're talking about it, and okay, you have been harmed and I recognize that I was responsible for the harm. The next step is redress, or how do we correct it? How do we ensure that we don't go into this place again? And see, as we said in the very beginning, what happens is because people don't know the steps, they get to the place, well, can't we just move on? And the other person says, oh, okay. And what we do is we simply bury the problem temporarily. And because the pain and the harm has never been has never been recognized or made corrected, then it will come up again. And this is the problem, particularly in family relationships. If you don't correct it, then I'll guarantee you, it will come up again. And then you get into this cycle where it never is solved and never resolved. So make redress, okay? How do we correct it? What actions are we going to take so that we can correct it and that you can truly understand that I'm sorry? The next step, the sixth step, is repetition. Now, what does this mean? It means that that action, that harm, cannot be repeated in the future, right? We don't want to get into this cycle of we think we've corrected it, but we really haven't, and the pain is still there. And so the next time I say that, or the next time I do that same thing, we're just repeating that cycle. We want to break the cycle of repetition. Finally, the last step is repentance. Now, when I talk with people in workshops and I mention repentance, they often think in terms of religion, right? Because repentance is such a big word, particularly in religions. But repentance actually means changed future behavior, right? We agree that the repetition change. Is not going to, yeah.
You said change future behavior, right?
Change future behavior, right.
Great.
Right. What does that mean? It means that, okay, I've said that we're not going to repeat it, right? I'm not going to do that again. I'm not going to say that again. Well, the only way that I can prove to you that that is true, that I'm not going to repeat it, is by changing my future behavior. So, if I said something or did something, right, that's caused you harm, and I don't want to go back there again, the next time I'm in that same situation, and I recognize, hey, I did this before, or I said this before, and it caused my partner, my child, my coworker, if it caused harm, then I can't do that again. Not only am I not going to repeat it, I recognize what I said or what I did caused this issue. And so repentance means in the future, when I find myself in that same place about to say or do the thing that caused harm before, I'm not going there. I'm not going to repeat that behavior. So that's the seven steps, and I'll go over them real quickly for your listeners. Recognition that harm has been done, take responsibility for that harm, have remorse, feel bad that it happened for you, have regret, feel bad that it happened for me, make a correction, make redress, don't do it again, no repetition, and finally, if I have this chance to say or do that again, I'm not going to do it. That's changed future behavior. By not doing it or saying it again, I'm proving to you that I'm committed to not causing harm to you again in the future.
Thank you so much. You know, it still boils down to communication. The other person refuses to talk about what he things or try to express how he has been hurt. Two things: pride on his side and lack of communication.
Okay, great question. Shavo, great question. All right, what you've just described happens so often, right? Because as people, we have different backgrounds and we have different ways we were brought up and we have different ways of responding. So I'm going to guess that the person who refuses to communicate and tell you, you know, why they feel the way they did, they probably spent most or some of their childhood in that same place, right? they were reprimanded or something happened and they retreated, right? They didn't want to communicate. And so that's the same behavior that they use as adults, because that's what they know. The important part about what you just described, especially with somebody it's long distance that you're not having, you know, face-to-face contact with, there's not a lot you can do. You can express that, you know, I want to talk about it and I want to work through it and I want to make it right, right? But if it's your partner or your spouse or one of your children that you're seeing face-to-face, the important thing that you can now see that you can't see long distance is their nonverbal communication, right? If we're together and you say, I'm sorry, you know, let's talk about it, and I refuse to talk about it, well, my words are saying one thing, but how I sit, how I stand, you know, have I got my arms crossed? There are nonverbal communications that say just as much as my words do sometimes. This is my suggestion. If you're in a situation with a spouse or a partner or you know somebody in your family or even a coworker, but not so much a coworker, but if you're trying to reconcile an issue with a family member, I always tell, you know, in my workshops, sit down facing each other, chair to chair, right? And you get close enough that your knees touch. So you've got your knees touching, and then you take the other person's hands and you put those, you know, on your legs. That's how close you are. So your knees are touching, your hands are clasped together. And now, because you've got some physical contact, then you open up the discussion and start talking about what happened and why it happened. And what you'll find is, because you've got this physical contact and you know you're as close as you can get without being like hugging, but you hold hands and you have knees touching, that allows you to only talk about the issue and how to repair it. You don't have somebody who is physically giving you nonverbal cues, right? If I'm standing on one side of the kitchen and you're standing on the other side and we're like 10 feet apart, if I've got my arms crossed, right, and I'm looking, or you're trying to talk and I'm looking around, and it's like I'm telling you I don't want to listen to you with my arms crossed and by not looking at you. These are why nonverbal communication cues are so important. And the way you eliminate those detrimental nonverbal communication cues as you sit facing each other, knees touching and hands clasped. Then all you have left is to talk about it, right? Now, again, you can't do it long distance. If you're in a long distance situation like you've described, you just have to tell the person, you know, I understand that I've harmed you, but I don't know how to repair that unless you want me to repair it. And sometimes you just have to give them time. It's just, you know, maybe the relationship never rekindles. You just never know. This is where red flag awareness becomes so important. If you're seeing this kind of behavior, then that gives you a red flag that, okay, we may not be able to reconcile and repair this. But again, if it's a family member, a spouse, or a partner, if you want the relationship to continue, you have to address the situation and you have to try and repair it and reconcile and make it better. And that's why the seven steps are so important, because they give you that path, they give you that guidebook of what you can do, you know, to make those things come to pass. Because when we reconcile in this process, we're looking for five things. First, we're looking for agreement. Okay, we agree that I said or did something that caused you harm. I recognize that and you recognize it. Next, we're looking for a way to correct those feelings that we now have. Third, we're looking for atonement, right? Okay, I know I did it, I know I said it, and I need forgiveness. That's the next step, forgiveness. This is the hardest part, you know, until the person who feels the harm is ready to forgive for what was said or done, the chances are the repair is not going to take place. It's only when we get to the place where a person can say, okay, I understand and I forgive you. I understand that you meant it, you know, as fun, but I didn't take it that way. Now I understand why you say you did it or what you said, now I forgive you for that. Only when we can forgive that person for being such a dunderhead can we start to rebuild that trust. Because again, the most important destructive part of, you know, these kind of acts and actions is broken trust. And until we can revive and repair the trust, the chances are that that pain is going to stay with the offended person and they're never going to trust us again. And if they don't trust, then our relationship will never be what it was before, and it certainly will never be able to grow. You know, a lot of people, especially in situations like infidelity, when that trust has been broken, they can reconcile, they can repair, and they can go through the repair process, but to rebuild the connection of that trust, right, sometimes takes a long time. It's not a quick process. It may take weeks, it may take months, it may take even longer. Sometimes the trust is never repaired. So find agreement, find a way to correct it, find a forgiveness, and then out of forgiveness, you have the chance to rebuild the trust.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much. And again, you have to say, I am sorry, and you really have to be real about it. Saying, I'm sorry, it has to be genuine.
It has to be sincere, right? It has to be genuine. You have to really think, you know, like you said the other day, like you were saying, you said you were sorry, but they didn't buy that. They didn't think you were being real and sincere. And that's why starting the process is so important. They have to know that you are sincere, that you recognize now, okay, you know, I said or did something that I shouldn't have said or done. And I'm sincerely sorry, but I'm also sincerely committed to making this, you know, in the past and making our future work together. And in order to help us do that, here's these 7 steps that we can do together. Now, what you said was important because sometimes one person doesn't want to go through the 7 steps. That in itself tells you that they are not ready to heal. And so that's why the 7 steps become so important. It gives us a path and it gives us a process that we actually can do and implement for possible repair and reconciliation. But again, both people have to agree to go through all 7 steps together. And if one person, you know, gets to step 4 and they say, nah, I don't believe you, I don't care anymore, you can almost be guaranteed that the relationship is going to continue to be, you know, one that's under pressure and tension, or it may not be a relationship that survives. But it's important to have the steps of the process so at least you know where to start.
Yeah, and you can't just come up and say, I'm sorry. When you don't know what you did wrong, just say, if I have offended you, I'm sorry. That doesn't make sense.
Exactly.
I have to know what I did to tell you I'm sorry. And there are sometimes you get offended. I won't even tell you sorry because I know that what I did is right.
Well, that's a different situation, yeah. If you were right, if what you said or did was the truth, then you know, for whatever reason they're not believing you, that's kind of on them. There's not a whole lot you could do. And again, you don't know what their entire past history of life and their past relationships looked like, or what might have happened, you know, in their life that puts them in this defensive place where they refuse to even look at the problem. And in, you know, many cases or most cases, that relationship is probably going to end, because you have to have that communication and you have to have that agreement to be open and honest with the situation of what was said or what was done. And some people just don't want to go there for whatever reason. You know, I've been with my wife for 25 years, and sometimes she says or does things and I don't know why, and dig a little deeper. Well, it was something that she experienced in childhood, or, you know, she's got this belief that keeps her in that place, even though she may know that it harms herself. So we never know, you know, what people's background totally looks like. All we can do is ask them to share with us why they refuse to communicate or why they don't want to go through the process with us. And if they don't want to, sometimes, you know, they just don't want to. We can't control what they are feeling or what they are thinking. All we can ask them to do is share with us, you know, their side of it, so that we can try and make amends that don't necessarily just make them right, but so that we can learn, because the idea in the process is for both people to start growing again, you know, and to support each other. And there's always going to be issues that come up in relationships. You know, life is made up of relationships, and it's the relationships where people desire to grow that keep, you know, keep together and keep growing.
Thank you so much for remaining with us to the end of today's episode on Vivid Vision Podcast. We had a wonderful guest today. Such an educative conversation. I hope you grabbed something from it. If you enjoyed today's episode, we'd like you to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Share Visions. You can also subscribe to our YouTube channel at youtube.com/Share Visions. Please like, share, comment, rate our podcast. That is very, very important to us. Rate our podcast on Spotify, on Apple Podcasts. Follow us on Spotify and also leave a comment on our episode. If you have something to say to us, you can send a voice note through our WhatsApp at +234 7039 694929, and your comments will be added to the next episode. If you would also like to be a part of the show, just let us know in the comments. Thank you very much. We appreciate your time. We see you again next time. Bye.